missing at all, not until now. I hadn't even checked the answer phone until today. Shit. I'm probably not half as observant as I think I am, and I have been pretty preoccupied lately. Oh my God. I hope I haven't been wandering around London making too many mistakes. Don't worry about it, Erin, it's fine. Just concentrate on the actual person you met today. The facts. This Patrick guy is probably SO15. I don't know, maybe they think there's a vague possibility that you're running information between prisons or something like that. I mean, your dad does live in Saudi, right? I give him a hard look. We don't talk about my family. It's weird that he's brought them up now. Erin, the police have to follow up on possibilities like that, even if they don't suspect you. They have to at least check. It would be ludicrous for the police not to check up on you. So, in light of that, honey, I think you seriously need to drop the Holly storyline. Just drop it. There's too much attention on her right now. All it will take is the smallest amount of digging by DCI Foster to bring up some fairly awkward questions about us. To put it mildly. He holds my gaze expectantly, brows furrowed. He's right, of course. They'll want to know why we travelled to Switzerland last week, and who is suddenly paying me a monthly retainer. Okay, I nod reluctantly. Good. Drop the Holly storyline, drop it from the doc, stop the research entirely, distance yourself, distance us. There's finality to it. He's so clear about this being the solution. The last I'd heard was that Andy and SO15 now had CCTV footage of Holly and Ash leaving the Istanbul airport and boarding a bus to Gaziantep, a small Turkish village near the Syrian border. It's all gotten very serious. Consider it dropped. I plop down on the sofa opposite him. My brain is whirring. I'll come back to Holly once our situation has settled down, but something doesn't quite fit in my mind. I don't agree about Patrick being linked to DCI Foster. I don't think the man I met today had anything to do with the police. I can't shake the feeling that what happened today is because of the bag. That someone did come to our home. Even if they didn't take that picture, I think they were here. No matter what Mark says. Yeah, I'm aware of how paranoid that sounds. Maybe the plain people know we're not dead. And now maybe they know we still have the diamonds and the phone in our home. It's true that we're still alive, but maybe they're just taking their time, working out the best way to do it. I think about the Sharps. They took their time with the Sharps, worked out a safe way to get rid of them, because they needed to make their deaths look like an accident. But then again, maybe what happened to the Sharps was just an accident. Mark seems convinced it was. Later that night, before bed, Mark sits on the edge of the bathtub watching me while I brush my teeth, a single sock in his hand. I can tell he wants to say something, but he's having trouble putting it into words. He takes a breath. Honey, I'm worried now, and please don't take this the wrong way. You know how much I love you, but I think you might be getting a little bit overwhelmed by all of this. That photo business today and the answer phone. Erin, you know no one is coming for us, right, honey? No one is watching us except the police. And you are refusing to acknowledge how dangerous that is. This Patrick guy today, you need to stop doing things that might attract attention from now on, sweetheart. Will you promise me that, Erin? I need you to stop doing things that the police might notice. We're sailing close to the wind here already. He looks at me, softly. I feel foolish and so guilty about the things I haven't told him. He's worried about me. He's worried about us. He continues, you asked me before what I thought we should do about the diamonds, and I've been thinking about it a lot. You're not going to like it, I know, but I think we should dump them. Just get rid of them. This is getting crazy. We should cut our losses, stop trying to sell them, just dump them somewhere. I don't think it's worth the risk we're running right now. We already have the other money, Erin. We're good. We have enough. We should stop. Something bubbles up inside me when he says this. I don't know why, but I'm annoyed with him. It's the first time I've ever really been frustrated by something Mark has said or done. Dump the diamonds. Why would we do that? We've come this far. What about his business, his plans, our plans. He was so concerned about our finances before. Why isn't he any more? What we've got in Switzerland won't last forever. We'll need the diamond money too to get his company up and running and keep all of this going. We could just store the diamonds somewhere, couldn't we? Why would we dump them? But then, realistically, I know that there'll never be a later date when we can magically find an easier way to sell them. And once we have a child, we won't be able to take any risks at all. Either we try and sell them now, or it will be too late. I look at him in his boxes, the sock still dangling from his hand. I love him so much. He is right. It is dangerous. But I don't want to just give up. Not after everything he's been through in the past couple of months. And what if, God forbid, his new business falls through, like all those job offers that never seem to materialize? No, we need to keep going, but cautiously. All right, yes, I see your point of view, Mark. I do, but can we please try one last thing? I'll come up with something, okay? Something safe. Just give me a few more days. I really think I can make something work. I do. Isn't that a better outcome overall? If we get the money for the stones too? I try to say it gently, calmly, but I'm not calm. To give up now would make no sense at all. He holds my gaze for a beat, then looks away. He's disappointed. Again. He tries to hide it, but I saw the flicker of it in his eyes. I've let him down again. Fine, he concedes. But that's it, all right? If this doesn't work, Erin, you'll stop? Please don't take it any further, honey. Don't keep pushing. He doesn't look at me then. He just stands and walks to the bathroom door, distant, alone. I feel like this is the closest we've got to an honest conversation for a while, and it hasn't brought us any closer together. A rift has opened between us. The more I tell him, the wider it will get. He knows about Andy now, he knows about Holly, he knows about the man outside the prison, Patrick. I can't just let him walk away. I need to bring us back together, I need to share a bit more of myself. Mark, do you really think they're not looking for us? I blurt out. He turns back, surprised. Who, honey? He looks confused. I don't know why I chose the plain people, of all things, to get closer to him. But they're on my mind. The plain people. Maybe you're right, maybe I'm crazy, but I feel like something is closing in on me, Mark. On us. Not just the police. Maybe it's something I haven't even thought of yet. I don't know. I know it sounds stupid and paranoid and I have no evidence to back this feeling up, but I can just sense it all around me. Like it's just waiting for something. I can't see it yet, but I can feel it coming. I falter, seeing his concerned face. I must sound totally insane. And I know if I feel this way about things, then I should definitely stop all of this. The diamonds, the interviews, everything, like he says. But instead of stopping, I'm just diving deeper and deeper in. Mark steps back into the bathroom and circles his arms around me. I let my head rest gently against his bare chest, listening to his heartbeat. He knows I need him. They're not coming for us, Erin. Whoever they are, they'd never be able to find us. And if they could find us, they already think we're dead. Honey, they aren't the ones we should be worried about. We should be worried about the SO15 investigation. And this Patrick character is almost definitely part of DCI Foster's team. I mean, think about it. If Patrick were related in some way to the bag, then I'm pretty certain the police would have noticed him hanging around by now too, wouldn't they? I nod mutely against his shoulder. He's right. In a way, DCI Foster might be keeping us safe. Mark places a tender kiss on my forehead and leads me to bed. Magically, we've come together again. I seem to have fixed the rift. For now. But as I lie in bed beside him, I wonder, would the police notice someone following me? They didn't notice a vulnerable young woman being radicalized right under their noses. They haven't noticed Eddie looking into my life. They haven't noticed a lot. Chapter 30. Saturday, September the 24th. Interview 3. My coffee steams in the sharp chill of the interview room. This September has been arctic. The garden in the room with me here in Pentonville looks more like an extra from the TV series T.J. Hooker. His physique appears to be 10% hat and 90% barrel chest. Maybe I'm being unfair. He's definitely more focused this morning than I am. I feel like I'm half asleep, stuck in an extended jet lag. I remember the sky back in Bora Bora, the heat on my limbs, the bright, clear days. I hope I wake up soon. What if the rest of my life is just a waking dream, trapped here forever? I think of Mark, out there in the cold, somewhere on the bustling streets of London. He's looking into office spaces for the new firm this morning. It all seems to be becoming a reality now. He's meeting Hector at a notary later today to sign some paperwork. It's all getting very exciting. My phone vibrates in my pocket. I decline the call. It's Phil again. He's furious we're dropping Holly from the dock. I emailed him first thing this morning and he's already called 3 times. He's not happy. There's a missed call from Fred, too. He wants to see the footage I've got so far. He's interested. He'll want to dissect the wedding, too, no doubt. It's pretty rare that a BAFTA-winning, Oscar-nominated director would ever have even a passing interest in a first-time film like mine. But that's nepotism for you. Well, maybe it's not. I mean, we're not related. He just gave me my first job. Somehow I managed not to fuck it up, and he's been watching over me ever since. Plus, he gave me away. I'd love to give him some footage, but of course SO15 has most of my footage. Explaining that to Fred will take more time than I have right now. The cage buzzer in the hall rumbles. Unlike the room at Holloway, this one has no door, only an archway leading out into a corridor. I wince at the off-white prison walls and tell myself to perk up. Life could definitely be worse. It could always be worse. The buzzer sounds again. I look up and see Eddie Bishop, 69, handsome, through the archway as he heads down the squeaky linoleum corridor, led by another guard. Although Eddie is wearing the same grey marl tracksuit that all the inmates wear, it doesn't quite hang the same on Eddie. He might as well be wearing one of the 3-piece suits I've seen him wear in countless research photos. He's got gravitas. But perhaps I think that because I know his crimes, his history. He looks like a Cockney Cary Grant. God knows how he stays so tanned in prison. He sees me, gives me a smile. Why are bad boys always so attractive? I suppose, at the end of the day, if you're not good-looking, you don't get away with being a bad boy. You get called a thug. He pulls out his chair and sits. Here we finally are. Me and Eddie Bishop. There are smiles all round, then T.J. Hooker pipes up. You all right, Eddie? Need anything? Water? His tone is friendly, pally. We're all friends here. Eddie turns back, slow, smooth. Nah, Jimmy, all good here. Thanks very much. His voice is cheery. Today is a good day. No problem. Just give us a shout if you need anything. Jimmy looks to the other guard now, the one who brought Eddie in, and gives him a nod. Both wander through the archway and out into the corridor. We'll be down the hall in the break room. Jimmy's talking to Eddie, not me. And with that, they both disappear from view, their shoes squeaking away, leaving me staring wide-eyed after them. Why are they leaving? I haven't even turned on the camera yet. This is definitely not normal. No one mentioned this to me in the briefing yesterday. They've left me alone in a room with Eddie Bishop. I wonder if I should be scared. I think of the answer phone messages. Eddie's killed a lot of people, or had a lot of people killed. There are stories, books full of stories of torture, kidnap, assault, and everything else that happened in the Richardson's gang and Eddie's 40 years at large. Urban myths. Nothing provable, of course. No solid evidence. No witnesses. I suppose I should be scared, but I'm not. And suddenly, it dawns on me. I never could figure out why Eddie had agreed to do this documentary with me. He must have had a million offers to tell his story, but he's never said yes. He's had no need to, and no inclination from what I can work out. But now, sitting across from him, unguarded, the camera beside me still not turned on, I realize I missed something important. There must be something in this meeting for him. Eddie needs something. And I suppose I need something too, don't I? My heart skips a beat. There it is. Fear. I turn on the camera. He smiles. Lights, camera, action, eh? He extends a hand across the table, slow. He's being careful not to spook me. He must know the effect he has on people. His singular brand of magic. Nice to finally meet you, Erin, sweetheart. Sweetheart. I'm a millennial woman. I've read my Adichie, my Greer, my Wollstonecraft. But him calling me sweetheart is somehow fine. It seems strangely innocent coming from him. Of another time. Nice to finally meet you, Mr. Bishop, I answer. I take his hand across the formica tabletop. He rotates my hand to the top, his thumb over the back of my hand. It's a squeeze, not a shake, a delicate squeeze. I'm a lady, and he's a man, and he's letting me know. Call me Eddie. The whole display is so old school it's laughable, but it works. I smile in spite of myself. I blush. Nice to meet you, Eddie, I say, almost giggling. Excellent. I'm an idiot. I take back my hand. Focus, Erin. Down to business now. I sort out my tone, reset my professional face. I suppose we should get this out of the way first, shouldn't we? Thank you for the champagne. Much appreciated. I meet his gaze. I want him to know I'm not intimidated. He gives me a sly smile. He nods. You're welcome. After a pause, he replies for the camera. I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about, sweetheart. If they don't sell it in the prison tuck shop, it ain't for me. Sounds like a nice little present, though. What's the occasion? He raises his eyebrows innocently. I understand. The camera is rolling, so we're playing it like this. We won't be mentioning the answer phone messages either, then. Very good. I give him a nod. I understand. I get back on script. Is there anything you want to ask before we get going? I'm eager to move on now. We don't have as much time as I'd like. He straightens up in his seat, readies himself, rolls up his sleeves. No questions. Ready when you are, sweetheart. Okay, then. If you could give us your name, conviction, and sentence, please, Eddie.
Eddie Bishop, convicted for money laundering, 7 years. Release is coming up before Christmas, which will be nice. My favorite time of year.
And we're off. He looks relaxed, at ease. He raises his eyebrows. What next? What do you think about your trial, Eddie? The sentencing? He's not going to incriminate himself on film, I know that. But he'll give as much as he can. He likes playing chicken with authority. I've read his court transcripts.
What do I think of the sentence? Well, Erin, interesting you should ask that.
The smile is sardonic now. He's amused, playful.
I'll be honest with you. Not much. Don't think much of the sentence. They've been trying to get something on me for 30 years, tried all sorts, and I've been acquitted of all sorts over the years, as I'm sure you know. It seems to me they've got a problem with a Lambeth lad making good, making an honest living. It's not supposed to go that way, is it? They couldn't make any of it stick till now. Any other man might have got slightly offended, if you know what I mean. Only a matter of time before something stuck. If you want to find something enough, it always turns up in the end. One way or another, if you catch my meaning.
He leaves that floating in the air. I think we all know enough about the 60s and 70s to guess that the police force might have been a little shadier then. He's suggesting they planted evidence to frame him.
I don't disagree. But what can I say? My bookkeeping isn't what it should be at the end of the day. Yeah, never was very good with numbers. Dyscalculic. Didn't pay much attention in school. he continues, tongue quite obviously in cheek. Of course, it wasn't diagnosed back then, was it? Dyscalculia. They just thought you were messing about or retarded. And I was a quick kid, you know, in other ways. So they just thought I was pissing about, winding them up. Different story in schools now, though, ain't it? Got two grandkids. I didn't stay in school too long, wasn't suited to it. So, in a way, I suppose it was only a matter of time before I slipped up on my sums, wasn't it? He smiles, warm and wide. I'm pretty sure he's got an accountant. I'm pretty sure that accountant was at the trial. It's astonishing that he can stick his finger right up in everyone's faces the way he has for the past few decades, bait the system and get away with it. But not only does he get away with it, I want him to get away with it. I'm rooting for him. Everyone is, for his brand of jaunty, cockney psychopath. It's fun. It doesn't seem like real, modern, raw, bone and gristle crime. It seems like Pearly Kings and Pie and Mash and I'll Be Mother. Good, old-fashioned British crime. Homegrown Brexit crime. Bob Hoskins, Danny Dyer, Barbara Windsor, the Italian job, hatchet in the trunk of the car, crime. Okay, I lean forward. I want him to know I'll play his game. You're not going to tell me about the Richardsons or any of it, are you, Eddie? I just need to know what game we're playing. Erin, sweetheart, I will tell you anything you ask, my darling. I'm an open book. I might not know the answers to some of your questions, but I'll certainly give it a go. So how about a smile? He gives me a roguish tilt of the head. I really can't help myself, it's ludicrous, but I'm enjoying this. I smile, with all my teeth. Thanks very much, Eddie. In that case, can you tell us about Charlie Richardson, head of the Richardson gang? What was he like? I think I understand the rules now. Ask around things, ask opinions, no facts. He was an awful fucking human being, but in the nicest possible way. Awful fucking human beings sometimes are. He sighs. It's all been said about the Richardsons already. Everyone involved in all that old East End stuff is dead now anyway. You can't rat on the dead, and I certainly wouldn't speak ill of the dead, but Charlie was a nasty fella. I never physically saw him do any torture, but he'd talk about it. He used the power generator from a dismantled World War II bomber to electrocute him. He'd torture him, slice him, scare him until they told him whatever he wanted. I asked him once, "How do you know they're not lying to you if you're torturing them?" He said, "They lie until they get to the point where they turn into little children, and all they can do is tell the truth." But you see, that's not what I was asking him. What I meant was, what if they told you the truth to begin with, and you kept on torturing them until they made up some old shit? That never occurred to Charlie. I didn't ask again. Different generation, Charlie was. Thought he knew what was what, but tortures never worked. You gotta respect people. Right, Erin? If you want respect, then you need to make sure you're respectful. Let people die with a little dignity. It's up to them if they live with it. No one can say you did wrong in this life if you've treated people with respect. I'm not sure that's entirely true, but I push on. Did you treat people with respect, Eddie? I ask. It seems important to ask. He looks up at me, eyes hooded. Yeah. Always have, always will. But you don't sign up for certain things without knowing the rules, Erin. And if you sign up for the game, then you can't complain when you lose. You gotta lose with dignity, is all. A good sportsman always lets people lose with dignity. He pauses, studies me. He's weighing me up. He wants to say something. I give him a moment, but he looks away, changes his mind. There's silence. He seems distracted, his mind elsewhere. We're getting close to dangerous territory, I can feel it. I change the subject to something lighter. What do you think you'll do first, when they let you out? Do you have anything in particular you'd like to do? I plow on. I need to keep the energy up. Turn it off. He looks at me, hard, unflinching.
His charm has suddenly vanished. I instantly feel sweat prickling along the back of my neck. The silence is thick between us. My heart is hammering. I can't interpret this situation anymore. There are no social cues to read. I have no frame of reference.
Turn the camera off. Now.
He's motionless, solid, immovable, dangerous. I fumble to turn it off. I don't know why, but I do as I'm told. It's the worst possible idea in this situation, but there's no other option. I could call out to the guards, but this isn't like that. It's not that sort of situation. Something else is going on here. I want to know what it is. I do what he says. The red light fades out. Is everything all right, Eddie? I don't know why I ask him this. He's clearly fine. I'm the one whose hands are shaking.
You're all right, sweetheart. Calm down.
His face is softened. His tone is gentle now. My shoulders slowly release. I hadn't realized they were clenched.
Sorry if I scared you, love. But here it is. Right. Well.
He seems engaged in an internal battle. And then it comes.
I want to ask you something. I wanted to ask you before over the phone, but it wasn't possible to discuss at the time, and I don't want it on camera. I'm going to ask you for a favor. If I'm totally honest, sweetheart, it's the only reason I'm doing this interview with you. You give me what I want, I'll give you what you want. So, there we are. Now listen up. I'm not going to say it twice.
I can't believe this is happening. Although, to be honest, I haven't got a clue what is happening. I wonder if this is the reason he's been leaving me those messages. If he's been leaving me messages.
I'm not used to asking favors, so bear with me.
He clears his throat.
It's a personal matter. I find this sort of thing quite stressful. And at my age, I try and steer clear of stress. You know how it is. I need you to do something for me. Will you do something for me, sweetheart?
He's watching me. I swallow. And then I remember that he probably wants an actual answer. My mind kicks up into another gear. What will I have to do? Oh, God, please do not be sexual. Shut up, Erin. Of course it's not going to be sexual.
What kind of thing?
I keep my tone as steady as I can manage.
I made some mistakes in my life, you know, with my family, maybe. My wife, definitely. But I know that's all done, that's over. Fine. I'm okay with that.
He brushes it aside.
But I've got a daughter. My Charlotte. Lottie. She's 28. Looks a bit like you. Dark hair, pretty, world at her feet. Beautiful girl. We're not talking right now, Lottie and I. She doesn't want me in her life, around her family. I'm sure you understand. And I don't blame her, she's a smart girl. We raised her smart. She's got a lovely fella now, he's good to her, and she's got two girls of her own now too. Look, I wasn't the best dad, obviously. I'm sure you probably picked up on that. Anyway, long story short, I want you to talk to her.
He gives himself a little nod. He got there in the end. He wants me to talk to his estranged daughter. Excellent. More family drama. Not what I need right now. I've got enough at home. But this is definitely not as bad as it could have been. I can talk to his daughter. I was actually planning on interviewing her anyway. Unless what he's really asking is some kind of euphemism. Is it a euphemism? Do I have to kill her? Does he want me to kill her? God, I'm hoping not. He would have been more explicit about that, right? Right? This is weird. Eddie, you're going to have to be slightly more specific here. What do you want me to talk to Charlotte about? Talk to her for the documentary or about something else? I choose my words carefully. He's obviously finding this conversation hard, having to ask people for something of a personal nature. I can't imagine he's had much need to do it before. I really don't want to piss him off.
No. Not about the documentary. Sorry, sweetheart. I couldn't give a sweet F.A. about the documentary. I looked you up after they first mentioned the old thing. Had you looked into a bit? You seem like a nice enough girl. kind of girl my daughter might be friends with. She'll trust you, maybe. This isn't my fucking forte. I just wanted to see I'm trying here. Let her know I'm together. I'm a good guy. I got it under control. Erin, you'll make an old man very happy if you do this for me. There isn't anyone else to ask, do you understand? It's not as if I've got women friends knocking about, and even if I did, Lottie'd run a mile from them lot. She needs to know I'll be better in the future, once I'm out. That I'll be there for her. That I want to be part of her life again. Help her with stuff. See the kids, my grandkids, all that. I just need you to talk some sense into her. Get her to give me another chance. She'll listen to you, I know her. Tell her I'm different. Tell her I've changed. He stops talking. The room falls silent. Why on earth would his daughter listen to me? Why would he think that? Maybe he's not as together as I thought. And then I catch sight of my reflection in the perspex glass of a poster screwed into the prison wall. Suit, blouse, heels, glossy hair, sunlight bouncing off my new wedding band. I see what he sees. I look together. A young woman in control of her life on the cusp of something. Professional but still open. Hard but still soft. In that magical period after youth and before age. He might be right. His daughter might listen to me. I can't hear the guards at all. I wonder where they are. Do they care what's happening in here? Did Eddie arrange for them not to be here? Ask them not to interrupt. He still has power outside prison, doesn't he? I look at him. Of course he does. They probably have to be careful around him. He'll be free again in 2.5 months. Untouchable. And he's just asked me for a favor. I'll do it. Screw it. Fortune favors the brave. That's a girl, he smiles. My stomach flips as I realize there's a chance here for Mark and me. I could ask for a favor in return. But should I? Is that a good idea? Eddie? I lower my voice, lean in, just in case someone's listening, just in case. If I help you, will you help me? I don't know anyone else who can help me with this. My voice sounds different to my ears. More serious, but thinner than usual. Needy. His eyes narrow. He studies me. I'm a pretty readable mark. What possible threat could I ever be? He sees that, then shows that glint of a smile. What is it?
Well, okay, long story short, I have some gemstones that I found. Okay, that sounds... I can't sell them, they're illegal, so there it is, and I need to sell them, off the record. Do you know someone, maybe, who could... My whisper trails off. Turns out it's not just former gang leaders who find favors hard to ask for. He's grinning at me now.
You naughty girl.
It's always the quiet ones, ain't it? I tell you what, it's fucking hard to surprise me, love, but I didn't see that one coming. Sounds like a quality problem you've got there, Erin, sweetheart. How many stones we talking, and what kind?
Eddie's enjoying himself. He's back in the game. Around 200 diamonds, all cut, all flawless, all 2-carat. I keep my voice low, but I know from his demeanor that no one is listening.
Fucking hell! Where the fuck do you get those?
His voice echoes out of the archway and down the corridor. I really hope no one's there, or I am so fucked. He's looking at me differently now. He's impressed. A million is a million. But then again, a million's not what it used to be.
Ha! He laughs. I'm not usually wrong about people. But every day's a school day, eh? Very nice. Yes, Erin, sweetheart. I can help you out with your little problem. Got a number to count?
I nod.
He laughs again, delighted. Course you fucking have. Brilliant. You're a find, Erin, sweetheart. You're a bloody find. Right. You'll get a call next week. Do what he tells you. He'll sort you out. I'll have a word. All right.
He's beaming at me. I'm glad it's gone this way. but it's all slightly disconcerting. And also easy. I'm not really sure how it happened. And now there's my end of the deal to keep. I can pop around to visit your daughter next week. I'll call Charlotte this afternoon, arrange a meeting. I know she'll accept. I haven't told Eddie, but we've already spoken briefly. She seems nice.
You got her number? Address?
His bravado is gone. He sounds like an old man again, scared and hopeful. Yes, I got it from your info. I'll have a proper chat with her. Suddenly, another thought occurs. It's so simple, but I think it will do the job nicely. Eddie, here's a thought. Why don't I turn the camera back on and you can record a message for Lottie? I'll edit it off the rest of the interview and she can watch it when I meet with her. I think that would make a big difference, hearing it directly from you. I know it would to me, if it was my father, you know?
It's worth a shot. He'll say it better than I would, that's for sure.
He thinks, drumming his fingers lightly on the table. Then he nods.
Yeah, you're right. Let's do that.
He's nervous. Bless him, he's actually nervous. Okay, I'm going to turn the camera back on now, Eddie. Is that all right? He nods, sorts his sweatshirt out, sits up, leans in. I stop, my finger poised over the record button. Eddie, can I just check one last thing? You haven't been leaving messages on my home phone, have you?
No, love, not me.
Well, that solves that. Oh, okay, never mind. Right, ready when you are, Eddie. I turn the camera on. When I get home, I tell Mark what I've done, the deal I've made for us. I know what should be coming. I brace myself for it. I know what I've done is insane. I know it's dangerous, but I trust Eddie. I just do. And now that I know he's not the one calling us and leaving messages, he doesn't seem half so threatening. But it doesn't come. Mark doesn't shout, even though I can see he wants to. He stays calm. He lays it out. I know you were just thinking on the spot, and you took your chance while you could. But that's when people make mistakes, Erin. If anyone sees this transaction happening, if this Holly thing comes to anything, aren't the intelligence services going to try and find as much CCTV of you as they can? We just need to be more careful. Sure, if this contact Eddie gives us works out, it's fantastic. But if not, there's no recourse if they rob us. There's no getting out of it if DCI Foster is watching and sees any of this. He's not saying anything I haven't already thought through myself. But if Eddie's contact robs us, then we're no worse off, are we? If you wanted us to get rid of the diamonds, just throw them out, then at least this way we stand a chance of making something from them. Right? He's silent. When he speaks again, his tone is grim. Erin, Eddie's contact could kill you. I know that, Mark, but do you really think I would have made this deal with someone I genuinely believed would kill me? Give me some credit, please. He sighs. You're not necessarily the best judge of character, honey. You do tend to see the best in people, which isn't always a good thing. I'm just saying we need to be far more careful than you are being. If the police manage to find footage of Holly in some tiny village in Turkey, then they can definitely manage Zone 1 of London. You need to be more careful, honey. They'll see the bank payments into your account from the Swiss account after Holly's missing. They'll see you in Hatton Garden trying to sell diamonds. And then the next week, you're back talking to more criminals. For all they know, meeting contacts, paying people off, to recruit, maybe. Who knows? It won't look great. He's talking like I've already been caught and sentenced now. Like I'm beyond help. He doesn't seem to care about the money at all anymore. I need to explain it to him. He's just not understanding. I know, Mark. I know all those things, and trust me, I am being as careful as it is possible to be. I know it's terribly risky. I know it's a gamble, but I'm doing it for us. For both of us. And I'm doing it for... I almost say, our baby. Almost. But I stop myself. I can't tell him about the baby now, can I? He already thinks I'm reckless. I can't tell him I'm putting his unborn child at risk too. Am I putting his child at risk? It's the first time I've really thought about it that way. Fuck, maybe I am. I was sure I was doing this for all of us. But now I wonder. Maybe it's all just for me. That thought sucks the air straight out of me. I stand and stare at him, empty. I feel my eyes fill. His face softens. What he sees are tears of repentance, tears of remorse. But that's not what these are. These are tears of confusion. My hot tears of confusion, because I can't tell anymore why I'm doing any of this. Chapter 31. Wednesday, September the 28th. Lottie. I suppose I'm on the wrong side of the table this time. Sitting across from Charlotte McKinroy in her lovely family kitchen, I wonder what I am now. Less than a month ago, I was just an average person, a civilian, someone with no angle. I belonged on the good side of the table, and on the other side were the bad people. Whether they were innately bad or just bad because of the choices they made was a subject of theoretical debate. But either way, they were different from me, different to the core. I was a normal person. Now it's Charlotte on the good side of the table. But was I ever a normal person? Because I really haven't changed that much inside, have I? I think the same way, I act the same way, I want what I want. I've only acted in line with the way I've always lived my life. Was that all wrong? Am I all wrong? I have broken a lot of laws. Not serious ones, I hope, but ones that mean I should definitely be in prison. Eddie got 7 years, just for money laundering. The thought makes me shudder. Lottie is soft and bright and as smart as you'd expect Eddie Bishop's daughter to be. We do look similar. She's the associate specialist emergency medicine doctor at Lewisham's ER. She works long days, but she's happy to fit me in. I'm not sure I'd be quite so magnanimous in her place, but she wants to help. She's a good person. She wants to do things the right way, not like her dad. I wonder suddenly in what inventive ways Mark and I will mess up our kids, if Mark will even want kids with me when I finally tell him. My hand falls down over my stomach, and I leave it there, an extra barrier of skin, flesh, and bone to protect my unborn child from the outside world. I spoke to Alexa yesterday evening after her IUI appointment. She may be pregnant by now. She'll have a test in 2 weeks' time, and we should find out. I know I shouldn't have, but I told her about my baby. I somehow got caught up in her excitement, and that's when I told her my secret. I had to share it with someone. I'm 8 weeks pregnant now. She told me I have to go and see a doctor, take folic acid, not eat soft cheese. I have been taking folic acid since I got back from Geneva. It's hidden at the back of the bathroom cupboard. But she's right. I should go to the doctor. It's important, Alexa insists. I tell her I'm too busy right now. Stuff has come up. I want to tell her what has come up too, but of course, I don't. I can't. The rift between Mark and me is growing. I've been pushing him. I don't want the diamonds to break our marriage. Are we a team? He'd whispered to me in bed last night. And I'd nodded. Of course. But he shook his head. Then I say we dump the diamonds. His voice was tight. We still have time to back out of this deal. The police might already be watching us, Erin. Who knows? You might be right, the plain people might already be watching us too. And now you want an East End crime syndicate to get involved with us as well. You're being willfully stupid, Erin. You're putting us both in danger. Keep your side of the deal with Eddie Shaw. Do his favor, but tell him you don't need his help with the diamonds anymore. He's right about one thing. Someone's definitely watching us. I'm certain of it now. There have been two more silent phone messages this week already, and it's not Eddie. Whether it's something to do with the plane people or SO15, I don't know. But someone is watching. Someone is sending a message.
It's too late to back out of my deal with Eddie now. You can't pull out of these kind of contracts. It doesn't work that way. And Mark will thank me later, I know he will. So here I am, fulfilling my end of the bargain. And this will work. Eddie's daughter sips her tea thoughtfully as I set up the tripod and camera. In the shot, Lottie is side-lit by the French windows that lead into her wet, autumnal garden. A clean, diffused light, stark, but delicate as filigree. Through the viewfinder lens, she looks relaxed, at home, a contrast to the tense energy of my prison interviews. I turn the camera on. Lottie, I visited your father last week in Pentonville. He spoke about you very fondly. Were you close when you were growing up? I'm going to take it slow, ease her in. After all, I really have no idea how she feels about him. She takes a soft breath. She knew there would be questions, but now that they're here, the reality of this interview is finally dawning on her. Big questions require big answers. A steep trudge uphill into the past. We were close, Erin. It's hard to say if we were closer than other families. I don't have much to compare it to. People sort of kept away from me at school. I get it now. I've got kids myself, and there's no way I'd let them be around people like my dad. But at the time, I thought it was me, that I wasn't quite right, that none of us were, my whole family not quite right. And it definitely made us closer, Dad and I. I was closer to my dad than my mum. Mum was difficult, always was. I think that's why Dad loved her, though. He liked to challenge, liked the payoff. He used to say, high maintenance means high performance. You know, like a car. Anyway, Mum was tricky, especially with me, but I was Dad's little angel. He was a good dad. He was. Told me stories, put me to bed. He was very good to me. So, yes, we were close. She watches me expectantly, waiting for the next question. Did you know much about his work, his life outside of his time with you? Interviewees usually need a while to gather their thoughts, to consider what they want to say. But Lottie knows what she wants to say. She's just waiting for the chance to say it. She looks out at the garden for a microsecond, then back to me. Nothing. Until I was maybe 13. I changed schools. They sent me to private school. Dad was doing well. I guess, before, I thought he was a businessman. Everyone looked up to him, everyone trusted his opinion. He seemed to be everyone's boss, there were always people around the house, smartly dressed. They had meetings in Dad's living room. Mum and Dad had separate living rooms. That's what it was like, you know? She looks at me, eyebrows raised. I nod. I get it. It was a rocky marriage. Her mother remarried while Eddie was in prison. The family split after the trial, each going their separate ways. Yeah, so did I know about Dad? She refocuses. I remember the night I finally figured it out. As I said, I was about 13. I just started at the new school. It was the weekend. There were people around, the usual lot, and someone new. They'd gone into Dad's living room together, and I'd been in Mum's watching a film. I came out to get more popcorn from the kitchen. It was a big house, you know. I heard a weird noise, like crying, but creepy crying, coming from the hall. I assumed the visitors had all gone already and Dad was watching Saving Private Ryan or something like that on loud. I don't know. He watched it a lot. He loves Tom Hanks. So I grabbed my popcorn and I went into his living room. Dad was leaning against his desk. Three of his work colleagues were there too. The TV wasn't on. There was another man on the floor in front of him. The man was on his knees. He was kneeling on this plastic sheeting, and there was blood pouring from his mouth. He was sobbing. Everyone else in the room was staring at me, standing there frozen in the doorway. But this guy just kept crying like he couldn't stop. Dad didn't look surprised to see me. just blank. And he still had his overcoat on. That's always stuck with me. He kept it on, like he might leave any moment, like he wasn't staying. At that point, Mum happened to come around the corner. She saw that I'd wandered in on something and grabbed me, took me upstairs. She was gentle about the whole thing. Well, for her. Told me the man I'd seen was a bad man, that Daddy was handling everything. Dad came upstairs about 10 minutes later. He asked if I was okay. I hugged him so hard. For ages. Like I was trying to somehow squeeze something back into him. Or out of him. But that's when I knew. That he was the bad man. That good people just don't do things like that. Even if someone else is bad. They just don't. After that, I was different with him. Wary, I suppose. I'd like to credit my younger self that he never even noticed the difference in me. I didn't want him to, you know? I still loved him. I would never want to hurt him. She stops, her focus snapping back from the past to me. Wait, I'm not sure you can use that stuff. I don't want to have to go to court or anything, you know? I don't really know what I saw. It was just enough for me to know. She gives me a tremulous smile. It's okay, I need to run a lot of stuff by the lawyers before we release the documentary anyway. I'll flag this for them. If it can't be used for legal reasons, we can easily scrap it. Are you worried about upsetting Eddie? I prompt. She lets out a little laugh of surprise. No, I'm definitely not worried about upsetting Dad. These things happened. If he doesn't like them, that's his problem. I just won't give evidence against him. There's a line, and I won't cross it. She says it calmly. I realize not much in life upsets Lottie. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Maybe they have more in common, she and Eddie, than she'd like to believe. I think now is the time. Lottie, what I want to do now, if it's okay with you, is show you a video. It's a message your father made for you during our interview on Saturday. I know it's your choice not to see him over the past 7 years, and if you're not comfortable doing this, that's fine. We just won't. I take it easy. I do want Eddie's help, but I'm not going to be a complete asshole to get it. If she doesn't want to see him again, that's his problem, not mine. She nods. Slow at first, but then faster. She wants it. She wants to see it. Okay, if you're sure. I whip out my laptop and slide it onto the table. I'll load it up for you, and then we'll just leave the camera rolling if that's okay. I want the footage of her watching Eddie. I want the reaction. I want people to see it. I want his favor, and I want the footage. I slide it around to her, and she hits play. Her hands fly up to her mouth. Maybe he looks older. Maybe he looks sadder. Maybe it's the tracksuit or the empty off-white room. Maybe he's thinner, weaker than she remembers. I don't know. But 7 years is a long time. I track into her eyes. Transfixed. I hear his words from last week. He's seen photos of Ben, their wedding. Her eyes crease, a smile behind her hands. Ben's a good man. She did well. He's proud of her job. She frowns. He's proud of her choices. She drops her hands, lets them lie lifeless on the table before her, wrapped. Then the meat of his message. He did things he regrets. He will change. Her eyes fill with tears. She's frozen now, mesmerized. The tears drip from lash to table. I'm no longer here in the room for her. Nobody exists but them, father and daughter. He won't bring that world to her. She'll be safe, separate. She wipes her tears away, sits up, solemn, inhales. He'll be a great granddad. Nothing. Sweets all round. A burst of laughter, gone as quick as a burnt magnesium strip. He loves her. Silence. Nothing. She pushes down the laptop screen until it clicks. She gives me a tight smile. I'll just get some tissues. 1 second. She exits frame. Her eyes are still red when she returns, but she's back to her usual self, a bit embarrassed by her display of emotion. I turn the camera back on. So how does that make you feel, Lottie? Do you think you could give your father another chance? Let him back into your life once he's out? Now I want to know for myself as much as for Eddie. I don't know what I'd do if I were her. I could speculate, but reality never matches speculation, does it? At least, not in the big things. She smiles, gives a self-deprecating chuckle. Sorry, it's a lot to process. God, I thought I was over all this. I really did. What was the question? Will I let him back in my life? Huh, no. No, I really don't think that's a good idea. I'm sure people will watch this and root for my dad, root for the underdog. He's a charmer, I should know. But no. No, I won't. And I'll tell you why. Because he's actually killed people. Real people. Sorry, allegedly. Don't use that, please. Fuck. Look, he's a convicted criminal. He is unreliable, he is manipulative, he is dangerous. And I have children, 2 little children, and a husband I love. And my husband has family who don't want to meet him either. I love my life. I like it just the way it is. I made it for myself, from scratch. So don't get me wrong, Erin, I'm thankful for my education, the opportunities afforded to me. But I put in the work. I turned up every day, in spite of my family, not because of them. She looks directly into the lens. Dad, I know you'll watch this, so here it is. I love you. I love you so much. But I can't be responsible for you. You made your choices. I'm glad you're proud of me. I'm going to keep making you proud. But I don't want you in my life. Know that and respect that decision. She's finished. She nods at me. That's all she's got. I turn off the camera. I know you think he's a good guy, but you don't really know him, Erin. Trust me. I think it's lovely you want a happy ending for us all, but things don't work like that. He isn't like that. He's careless. He's careless with people. People drop off the radar, and to him, that's fine. Well, I don't think that's fine. So I'd rather not. I appreciate the effort, though. I really do. When you see him again, tell him he looks well. He'll like that. We make more small talk as I gather my bags. I pack away my footage, like gold dust. I did all I can do. She's not an idiot. And if I championed him any more, she'd have realized something was up. I gave her the information, passed along his request, and let her choose. That's all I could do. I just hope that's enough for Eddie. Chapter 32. Wednesday, September the 28th. A man at the door. The house phone starts ringing the moment I unlock the front door. Mark is out looking at more office rental spaces this afternoon. He should be home in an hour or so. I asked him to come back around 3 just in case it all went wrong with Lottie. The phone rings twice before I can reach it, racing across the front room. It could be the silent caller again. It could be Patrick. I might catch him this time.
Hello, is this Erin?
It's a gruff voice. 40s, Cockney. It's something to do with Eddie. I know it instantly. Oh, yes, speaking. I try to sound professional, as if this might be a legitimate work call. I really hope Andy Foster isn't monitoring my calls, because if he is, this one could very quickly become incriminating.
Hello, Erin. My name's Simon. I'm meant to be picking up a package from you, I think.
A second silence on the line.
Now, I know you're busy, but I'm in the area at the moment. Would now be a convenient time for you?
He must suspect a phone tap because he's working around it. He just sounds like a courier. Or at least that's what we can argue in court, if we have to.